But yeah, I spent some time in Reno and I got called out for saying Nevada instead of Nevada, which still feels wrong to me. I don't know if it's like a Northeastern Massachusetts thing.
Wait, you said Nevada?
Yeah, I say Nevada. Nevada.
Oh, yeah, no, I've never really heard anyone say that.
What do you say, Nevada?
Yeah.
It seems so weird. The nasally A just feels wrong to me.
Nevada sounds pretentious.
I guess I can see where you're coming from, but Nevada sounds, I don't know, lowbrow? The opposite of pretentious.
Yeah, yeah. There's no middle ground.
Nope.
I've never even really been, I don't think, I've been to the Vegas airport. I've never really been there. So I've gone skiing in Tahoe, which is on the border. But yeah, I've never really gone to Vegas myself.
Yeah, I haven't been to Vegas. We spent a weekend in Reno because it was close by and we had a connection there to hook us up with some sweet deals there. So it was fun. I mean, Reno itself is pretty depressing, actually. Let's be honest. It was pretty sad.
Tahoe is in the summertime as well.
Yeah, we went to Tahoe for 4th of July fireworks, like on the lake, and it was just...
Okay.
It was a whole thing. Way too many people and just not worth the effort, honestly.
We went on a company trip at Octopus one time. We rented a cabin in Tahoe and everybody went.
See, that sounds awesome.
It was cool. My buddy ZK, shout out to ZK, he was mountain biking a lot. So he had me take him up to the top of some mountain basically and just drop him off. He's like, if I'm not home in 3 hours, call the police. And he's like, see ya. And just kind of like, you know, went down the hill. And there was a lot of alcohol consumption, I guess. So I came in from outside one night and people were drinking and playing pool, and they, like, you could tell, like, when someone that's been drinking sort of looks at you, they're like, they like zero in on you, you know? And that started happening. I was like, I'm gonna go upstairs, I'm out of here. And then anyway, so the next morning I wake up, and I usually just wake up pretty early and everyone's still asleep. I wake up and there's just like little spats of blood on the floor.
Oh no.
It's like, what is happening? So, and it turns out that one of the people stepped on some glass and they didn't notice. And so like they just tracked it all over the floor and then went to bed.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So that was the last time I went to Tahoe.
The first and last time.
Yeah. It was fun though. Like it's beautiful scenery. You know, Emerald Lake is really cool too. We had some people, I think friend of the show, Nabil, swam to the little island out there. That was pretty fun, but yeah, it's a cool place to visit.
Yeah, the lake itself is, it's hard to comprehend how big it is until you see it. And it's also strange being on the shores of the lake in the summer and you're baking and then there's just snow on the mountaintops. It's just, yeah. It's just so strange.
It's hard to comprehend how deep it is.
Oh, I can't even imagine, yeah.
Lake Tahoe depth. I thought it was like 1,644 feet.
Wow.
I don't like to think about that at all. It's kind of like looking at Crater Lake too. When I went to Crater Lake in Oregon, it's like 1900 feet deep. And I'm just looking at this. It's like a pit of water that's 1900 feet deep. What's in it?
That's another one that I was pronouncing wrong for most of my childhood. Oregon. No, Oregon instead of Oregon or vice versa.
I think I picked up Oregon when I moved to the West Coast.
Sure.
That's where I heard people saying it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we actually almost lived there because Jamie almost went to school in Portland. So we went out and checked it out, did some hiking, which is pretty cool. Ate some food, really good fried chicken I had there. It was good. That's what I remember about Oregon. Well, how has your week been? I know you said it's been kind of a rough week for you.
Yeah, I don't know, just approaching, feels like I'm approaching a kind of mini burnout cycle. I don't know, man. It's hard when you're just plugging away at stuff and not feeling you're making a lot of progress, and especially when you're just bogged down by meetings and interacting with people and just trying to coordinate things. I mean, I'm preaching to the choir here. I don't need to explain this to you, but... it's just been really, really slow going from a feeling productivity sort of sense. And I think it's a long weekend this weekend. You know, obviously I don't have to take Monday off for any reason. I could work all weekend if I wanted to, but I think I need to take a day here and there and just kind of re-energize a little bit because I do have a deadline I'm working towards for this contest. It is next weekend. We'll let you know next week episode how that is going, because we're going to record next week, the night before the contest, so everything should be, knock on wood, all ready to go for that. You know, it's just been, it just is what it is, you know, it's still making progress, so it's fine, but having trouble finding time and energy to motivate to, like, push yourself over the finish line, you know?
Is it mainly because you're having to juggle so many things? Like, you feel like you can't really dig into something and knock it out in one go?
Exactly. It comes down to context switching, really. You know, it's finding, you got to really find time to just command Q Slack, command Q Discord, focus in and sit down for a couple hours and bang something out. That's the only way you're going to make make any headway on this. And you know, I'm getting better about ignoring the stuff. You know, I got a bunch of people messaging me on Slack over the weekend. I ignored it. You know, like, it's okay. The problems will still be there Monday. You can deal with them later. I'm trying to get better about that, and just so that pressure isn't always constantly on my shoulders.
Yeah, that can be difficult. The pressure thing, it's sort of like a self, like, you feel obligated to, because you want to be good at communicating, so you want to reply to people right away. I've struggled with that a lot. I guess more recently, and not everyone can do this, but what I've been doing is actually take an hour and a half or two off in the afternoon and just go outside, because the weather's been really nice. And then I'll just make that hour and a half up later, like in the evening when no one's around and I can focus. So I'll either play like a game or something if I need to relax, read a book or something, or I'll make up some time that I missed during the afternoon. That's been helping me a lot, but not everyone can just, you know, not everyone has that luxury just to be able to go outside if they're like not getting much done, but that's been really helping me a lot.
Yeah, I actually tried that this week. It was nice out. I went for a walk for a half hour at lunch just to kind of clear my head and get away from things. And that was, like I said, it was kind of nice. You know, I might do that more often now that the weather is finally improved here and we finally stopped getting snow in May.
I sort of have to force myself to not take my phone or my AirPods with me. Phone I put in my pocket, but not take my AirPods, because it's like I always have something going. I get up, I put on a podcast while I'm making breakfast or stretching or cleaning during the morning. And then, you know, I'm sitting down and I'm working, people are talking to me and listening to music. And then I go outside and I put another podcast. There's not like that time of silence to like leave myself with my thoughts. It's sort of the easy thing to do is just always be consuming. And so I've been trying to be more mindful of not consuming all the time, but
ABC, always be consuming.
Yeah. So I don't know. Watson's been, you know, helping me out. The dog parks are still closed, so he requires extra energy burn off during the day from either me or Jamie. And Jamie's been busy recently, so that's on me. So today was nice. I just went outside and walked around. Normally we have like a path that we go, so I know. It's different, like when you're walking and you're on a route and you're like, okay, I know where I'm going, you're going somewhere. And today, I didn't follow the route and I wasn't necessarily going anywhere. I was just letting Watson go where he wanted within reason, and I was just following him, you know? Because there's a park next to our apartment, so we just went to the park and I let him sort of wander and made sure he didn't get stung by the bees he was trying to eat. And that was kind of interesting. I'd never do that. I never don't have a path or like a place I'm going.
It sounds like something like a character would do in a horror movie, and you're like, "Don't do it! Don't do it! Don't
eat the bees!" Yeah.
No. Just like go off and like.
Oh yeah.
Like randomly explore or something. Like.
Yeah, it was pretty nice though. And then we ended up, you know, he ended up running into a friend of his, and they came over, and me and the owner. Even though our dogs are like pounding each other into the ground, you know, we're like on our leash away talking to each other.
Watson has more friends than you. Is that what you're saying?
He actually does have way more friends than me. He was playing with Mila today. A couple days ago, he was playing with Sushi, which is a pug. Sushi's awesome. And his favorite friend is Lou. He plays with Lou all the time.
That fits, because a pug kind of looks like a roll of like a sushi roll, kind of squished.
Yeah, but I feel like I always fall into this grind mode. I don't know where it comes from. Maybe from music, I don't know. But like whenever I'm doing something, I always have to like have a goal that I'm trying to achieve, and so I'm always grinding for a goal, whatever it is. Even if I'm playing dumb video games, I'm like, I gotta win, you know, or I have to do this or I have to do that, and then it becomes a grind. And like, if I'm going on a walk, it's like, okay, we got to get this route. You know, I'm going this route, Watson, this is where we're going. If I'm working, or, you know, obviously there's work goals there. If I'm even just like reading a programming book, it's like forcing myself to remember as much as I can. And then when I'm done reading, I have to like write all these notes on what I just read. So I just need to learn how to chill out, I think is what I'm getting at.
You need to learn to relax.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I need to learn to relax. I guess cooking is the only time that I don't really have any strict like goals that I'm working towards, or that's like my time to relax is cooking, I suppose. But
well, you made allusion to this last week, which I kind of wanted to circle back on. You mentioned kind of Netflix or just streaming video is kind of a derogatory way, like that doesn't count as relaxation time. It's kind of like wasted time. Is that, did I kind of interpret that the right way, or what do you?
It can feel that way.
Yeah.
I guess it depends on what you're getting out of it, right? So I think at a certain level, that's healthy. If you're just, you need to decompress, and playing a game stresses you out, reading a book stresses you out, depending on what you're reading. Netflix can definitely be that sort of decompression, right? Don't have to think, you're just watching a show. You don't have to think about what you're watching, what you're reading, what you're doing. But at a certain, it sort of tapers off, right? So like after how many, like after your fourth episode, maybe like once that are you still watching pops up, maybe like maybe you're diminishing returns on that time, you know, invested in relaxing. And, you know, I don't want to talk bad about Netflix at all, because I definitely, you know, watch probably more than I should. And that's, it is what it is. And especially now, I think a lot of us, especially think like we're always hearing negative thoughts in the news, but especially now, everything's like COVID, lockdown, quarantine, right? I think that there's definitely a certain level of psychological stuff happening there. And I think Netflix happens, like helps with that. But yeah, I think at some point it's like diminishing returns on that relaxation, and you get into a, I don't know, it's kind of like eating junk food, right? Like you can eat junk food and it's fine, but then you keep eating it and it's not fine after a while.
So what you're saying is everything in moderation.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. Yeah, no, I think you're kind of close on that. It really just comes down to like what you're wanting to achieve, I suppose. I don't. There's a lot of people that I follow online that it seems like they're always producing, and I know that's not the case because I know that they're like taking time. And I feel like everyone's always producing, because I feel like I see tweets that are about producing content, but it's never from the same person a full stream. It's always like, you know, different people, leading to that feeling of everyone's always producing, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, I think a matter of it is just unplugging, but yeah, I don't know. Like, hopefully you're able to unplug soon, you know, get some time away, take Bucky on a nice long walk.
Oh, we've tried that before.
Really?
We put him on like a harness and a leash, try to take him outside, and did not go well. Cats, you can't walk a cat.
Well, there's people around here that beg to differ. In fact, one woman walked her cat right past the dog park. And it laid on the ground.
Yeah, slink mode.
Which I don't blame it. And there's another family. They don't really walk their cat, but they walk their dog, and the cat follows around. Like, it follows them like 20, 30 yards behind, and it sort of just like zooms out around bushes and trees and stuff, but it's always behind them.
That's funny.
Yeah.
The cat's walking the human, walking the dog.
Yeah, something like that. The cat's overseeing the walking of the dog. How do you think our stream went? Was it yesterday?
What day is it? Yeah, it did an impromptu stream on Wednesday this week. The process was, I messaged you in Discord, hey, should I stream PCB design? And you said, yeah, go for it. And that was all I needed to hear. So got on the channel, our DNC Twitch, and shared my screen for about 3 hours, doing a little PCB board design. Stream all the everything, says Ducky in the chat. That's I mean, you just all about like throw stuff against the wall and see what sticks. You know, I don't know if anyone who follows us is interested in what I'm doing. It's the only one way to find out.
Well, so last week we were talking about this idea of focus on 2 hours, not 2 years, I think was the title. It's one of the podcast episodes from the Laracast snippet. And you had mentioned to me that you said, hey, I want to stream this. I said, cool. And then today you said that was actually sort of my 2 hour thing. know, because we talked about if you have side projects, just think about it in 2-hour increments, schedule 2 hours a week and focus on just doing that for 2 hours. So you have real focused work for 2 hours a week, and that'll snowball over time. And then you messaged me sort of following up like, hey, that was sort of my 2-hour time where I really kind of got in and was able to get a chunk of work done.
Yeah, it was definitely kind of a retrospective thing where this project was for work. I mean, it was for my business, but it's kind of a long-term sort of project that's not really, it's not a real deadline. It's just kind of experimental, it's in the development phase, right? We're still kind of playing around, toying with some of the ideas and seeing if it's feasible. We call it like our Skunk Works projects. So in that sense, it is kind of a side project in that like it's when energy allows for it to be worked on. And this kind of, you know, after hours when no one's bothering me on Slack or whatever is when I can find time to work on this stuff. And if it's interesting enough that I'm motivated to work on it, even though it is, you know, technically my day job, right? So that's what this was. I started with, I had an existing board design. This actually worked really well for like a single stream in terms of like, sometimes these designs take many, many, many hours to do. But because I had done all the research and all the everything ahead of time, it was easy to compartmentalize down into a little chunk here. And it's crazy because I literally started with nothing, and by the end of the stream, I was able to actually have a circuit board that's ready for production that I can start to use to test things. Sitting down and focus to do that was really, I knew I wanted to do it, but I couldn't find the chunk of time to do it, and that was perfect. The extra motivation of putting it out there on the stream, and maybe someone will find it interesting, and you know, that was enough for a driver just to get me over that hump and get that out the door. So that was a pretty cool experience. I'm definitely looking forward to doing more of that. Like, I'm already thinking about what the next one is going to be. I don't know yet, but I would like to do it again because it was actually pretty fun.
That's really interesting to think about, the idea that it was sort of extra motivation for you to get on and focus on this thing and get it out the door. So friend of the show, Kid Queb, Nick Quebman, has been streaming. I don't know what his streak is now, but it's a long streak now. Probably like a month of every day. And he's always, for as long as I've known him, it's probably been 6 years now, he's got folders full of like designs and side project ideas and these really cool app ideas. And he's always sort of had trouble shipping them, getting out the door, following through, or, you know, keeping momentum going. And yeah, so anyway, he started streaming and suddenly he's just pushing, you know, he's pushing stuff out the door because he sort of has this accountability, right? So he started streaming, he hit like a week or something like that. And then from there, it was sort of always just, oh yeah, I got to stream tonight because, you know, 15 people are going to show up and they expect me to be there. So I'm going to be there. And, you know, now then he's like, oh, I'm shipping a beta next week. And I was like, wow, that's really cool. I don't know. It was interesting because I was kind of thinking about that a little bit too. Can it be something that I could sort of leverage as extra motivation if people are around and are watching? Can it be something that I can use for extra motivation to, you know, help me get something out the door? So I don't know. I'll have to think on that a little bit more. I would like to do some live streaming as well. I'm trying to level up in PHP a bit because side doors in PHP. And, you know, I would like to be able to contribute at some point, but I don't know if anyone wants to like watch me read the PHP docs. That seems really boring, right?
Well, you and I have talked a lot about generating content in the form of, well, obviously we do the podcast, but then there's blog posts and then there's the streaming, right? And those are two very, very different mediums in the sense that like when you do a blog post, it's very highly produced. You want to get everything right. And then it's on the internet for eternity and you're going to get a larger amount of feedback because it's an easier medium to consume than like an hour long stream that's recorded that someone's going to watch. Right? Like, you know, if someone's not watching a stream live, they're probably not going to watch it. But people are going to read your blog post forever. So like you're always going to, there's that extra, you got to put in the extra work to make it right and make it perfect. And obviously you can edit over time. It's not like it has to be really perfect, but you want that first impression to be good. Whereas with the stream, it's like, okay, I've got everything set up. I just hit go live and that's it. Like you've already started producing content and
yeah,
the effort as a creator is so much lower, but the accountability is still there, you know? And I think it's a lot easier to get started with that than it is to sort of be generating regular written text that requires sort of editing and forethought. Not the same put down streaming at all. I'm just saying it's just different in that way. It's a lot. The momentum required to get it started is a lot lower.
Well, it's sort of stream of consciousness versus planned, conscious writing and editing, I think. Mm-hmm. Stream of consciousness is obviously easier because you can just get into that by talking or doing something, I've always struggled with blog posts too, because I'll write it, think it's not good enough, get stuck on little details that don't matter probably. And that's what holds it up. And whereas streaming is just, you're just sort of doing it. I guess with Twitch, you can go back and clip it into segments if you wanted to. But, I've never really seen, I don't see how like someone would put together a portfolio of like, oh, here's a bunch of Twitch stream clips of me building an app. I guess that would work, right? It's like evidence that you're building something, and it's like evidence of your thought flow and your problem solving process, right? Because a blog post, like you said, is a produced piece of content. So you get the end result, and you don't get everything that happened in between. And Shrockster in the chat just asked about what about video versus streaming too? And when I'm looking at video can kind of be like a blog post where it's a highly edited, polished piece of work that comes out the other side. You don't really get to see the steps in between there. And sometimes I miss those steps. So especially for programming videos particularly, it can be really beneficial to see how someone debugs a problem when they run into it. So more recently, I've been watching the Laravel Livewire video course that Caleb Porzio has put out. And if you back him on GitHub, you get access to this course. And he specifically stated up front, he's like, I decided to keep these mistakes in because it might be useful to see how I debug something. And sure enough, he ran into an issue that I had ran into. And instead of going forth and starting to like try to piece together blogs and Stack Overflow posts being like, is this really what's happening here? He was like, oh, here's how you fix it. And then it sort of like answered that question right there. So I guess it depends on what the end goal with the medium is, but I kind of like seeing how the sausage is made, so to speak, right? I like to see how the mistakes happen, how they're fixed, how people debug things, how people go about thinking. Because I think when all you consume is sort of polished end pieces like blog posts and videos and produced video courses, it can be sort of warps my mind anyway. So when I start to make things myself, I'm like, oh, this isn't going to turn out like what theirs turned out like. So I just kind of stop working on it.
I even found reviewing my own footage from yesterday was actually insanely useful for myself, because I was watching, myself click around on the screen. And it's funny because as you do that, your brain kind of, you know what you're going to do next because you just did it. You can anticipate what you're going to do. But for example, one of my takeaways was like, oh my God, I'm so inefficient with these tools. Like I'm watching myself like manually type in keystrokes or fiddle around with menus and try to like, all the stuff that in the moment you're just so focused on the end goal that you don't see all these little time sinks along the way and inefficiencies. And watching myself on the stream, I'm like, oh God, like it's so hard to watch, because it's like whatever you're doing should, all those little steps should be easier. And so now I'm looking for ways to sort of streamline my process. And I just got that from my own feedback, just from watching my own stream. As narcissistic as that may seem.
Yeah. No, it's sort of like performance art. Like, so that's what I used to do when I was practicing guitar a lot, is I would actually record myself playing. And that's the most humbling thing you can do as a musician.
That's the worst.
Is listen to just a plain track of you playing. Just, you hear everything, or you'll see everything. And it's, yeah, like Thomas in the chat just said, like athletes watching game footage, or I forgot what show I was watching, but they were analyzing runners, their posture and how they ran, their cadence and their stride and stuff. And you can isolate and fix many problems by doing that. And it's interesting because I hadn't thought about that with programming too, like seeing how inefficient you might be in a language or in an app, or sort of just identifying those after the fact is really intriguing to me.
I kind of wanted to do a time lapse of the stream and just to, might be a fun little thing to compress down that whole design process into a short little stream to see.
I'd be really interested in watching a stream of how do you even get started with PCB stuff? So PCB stands for what again?
printed circuit board.
Yeah, so I would be interested in watching just an intro on how you even get started in making circuit boards. Because so Jamie looked over my shoulder and she was like, what is he doing over there? It looks like, I forget what she said, but basically it was like you were doing rocket science. So like, and I was just watching you do this thing and we just had no concept. Like, obviously I could recognize like the shapes of certain components and things like that. And I could recognize, oh, this looks like a computer chip because that's what a chip looks like in Factorio or something. Right. But, yeah, I'd be really interested in like an intro stream or something like that. Like schedule it and say, all right, we're going to talk about what I know about PCB design.
It's interesting. Maybe use like a really simple example project. Like, hey, we're going to design a power supply or something, right? Like,
yeah,
some kind of building block. Yeah, that's cool. And that really, that's actually more daunting to me because it really tests you as the creator, your deep understanding of what you're teaching, because you have to be able to explain it in simple terms. And, yeah, I don't know if I'm quite there yet with this level of expertise, like, but, I've mostly just learned it by just figuring it out myself. Like, I obviously have the background in the theoretical aspects of circuit design, but the physical, dealing with the practical things of actually picking parts, laying it out on a board, designing, engineering something, basically the engineering part of the engineering, that's all just been a lot of trial and error and reading and seeing people fight on Stack Overflow.
Yeah, there's that. There's always that.
There's a Stack Exchange just for, you know, electrical engineering stuff, and it's about as opinionated as the as the programming one.
I can imagine it would be. Yeah, but it was interesting for me to watch regardless, because I didn't have any sort of concept, and that's what, so I've been spending more time on Twitch and less time on other social networks, just seeing what people are up to. So the engineering manager, I want to say, I forget his name, I'll put it in the show notes, but the engineering manager of CockroachDB was writing. He was just streaming, working on Go, because it's written in Go. So he was just streaming, working on stuff. And that was really interesting to me because I have a little bit of experience in Go. And this was like diving way into the deep end beyond like, you know, anything I'd ever done. And so he's just hanging out and answering questions about what he's working. And that was super informative to me. It's sort of, I find myself sort of, I don't know, making acquaintances, I suppose. So I'll drop in, like I'll get a notification, drop in, hey, how are you doing today? You know, checking in on some people. So it's funny how quickly it sort of like became a part of my daily routine, I guess. It's just sort of like chatting with a person who happens to be streaming what they're doing live, checking in, see how they're doing, you know, helping them answer questions. Because a lot of people that are interested in programming check out those live streams and ask questions like, how do I get started and stuff. So I'll jump in and answer questions about freelancing or how I got started or whatever, you know, for a few minutes while I'm cooking or something like that, and then take off.
And I think I mentioned this before, but we've been streaming remote ham radio, like ham radio stuff. So someone will get on the air and just start working, guys, all over the world, and we'll stream that, not development wise, just actually being on the air. And that we have a big following on Facebook for that, actually. We stream it on Twitch and YouTube as well, but Facebook is where the big following is right now. Just this morning, Ray, who does the streaming, talked to two guys on two separate occasions who were like, oh, I watch your stream. It's great. I watch it every day, like whenever you're live.
Yeah.
The far-reaching effects of that are pretty amazing when you do it consistently like that.
It's happened a couple times to me where I'll go into some person live streaming code and they'll drop into their chat and start talking. And somebody's like, oh, hey, listen to the show. I've avoided thus far saying, like, oh, check out our stream on Thursday, you know, because I don't feel like I'm in a band again. But that was also really cool to me, kind of having that, oh, hey, you know, I've listened to your show, because feedback can definitely be, you know, few and far in between, even when we ask for it every week. Cough, cough. But it's I don't know, it's just cool to interact with more people. And I'm so used to only really interacting with the dev community on Twitter that it just feels different, and it's kind of cool.
Yeah, self-promotion is weird, even of the podcast itself. But some of my friends are like, why have we even heard of this? I'm like, I don't know, I didn't think you would be interested in this. Like, this
right.
Is not for you. But I'm really wondering, do you think the trend of people streaming stuff has increased because of isolation things, and do you think it'll go back down when people start going back to work? Like, do you think this it's kind of a fad and will taper off, or do you think it will grab some hooks and we'll have some new content out there that wasn't there before? I don't really know what to think.
I haven't looked at any numbers or anything, but I think like even without the quarantine, streaming has just been skyrocketing regardless. So there's also things like, you know, other companies that are making it a lot easier to get into it. Like we're using Lightstream right now. Streamlabs is a big one too. But I also noticed that Twitch is sort of making their own. And so there's some level of having to have some sort of know-how, like designing scenes or anything like that with OBS or Streamlabs and stuff. But Twitch actually has, I think it's called Twitch Studio now. You download it, you put your name in, you pick a style, and then it sets up like some basic scenes for you, and then you just click go live. So I think part of it too is that the tooling is making it more accessible for people that aren't necessarily tech savvy to get in and just put something out there.
They even have like really specialized hardware. I don't know if you've seen any of the Elgato products.
Yeah, I have.
They have like the Stream Deck, which is really a terrible name because you can use, it's basically a 24 key OLED keyboard that you can program to do anything. I don't know why they market it as a streaming device, but there it is.
The Stream Deck.
Yeah. They have all kinds of things. I even saw one that was just like it's basically just like a puck, kind of like Apple TV size puck that would kind of handle everything for you. A plethora of software I can understand, but actually seeing companies specialize in the hardware for streaming is really, really signaled to me that this is, like you said, it's really blowing up.
Yeah, and I think, like, so Shrockster in the chat said they'll think it will increase as more people become comfortable doing it. I think it's definitely becoming way more comfortable because, you know, even having Jamie look at it and not balk at it like, oh, that's weird that people are doing this. It's just, she was like, oh, okay, that's cool. I think that was a different response. And granted, you know, she's come way more into the tech scene and gaming and stuff like that since being with me, but I haven't really... I guess I don't talk to a ton of people, but it seems to me like, yeah, it is becoming more commonplace and accepted. And I can't remember what year it was a few years ago that I, like the League of Legends big tournament got more viewers than like the NBA finals or something like that. So esports is gigantic. It's just maybe it's less mass marketed and less, you know, people being vocal about it. You kind of have to be in the right area to sort of notice it, I guess. And I think really that's becoming more mainstream. It's becoming more visible. More people are talking about it. Like Ducky just said in the chat, you know, they've noticed a lot more tech streams in the last couple of months and people sort of being more vocal about it. I can definitely see that. I've definitely seen more people be vocal about their streams. But I think for us specifically, is Paul and I actually were trying to set up some streams back in the day when he was still around the podcast, and we just never got around to it. So I think for us, maybe the quarantine definitely helped because I'm just sitting here all the time. But I don't know. I'd be interested to see some numbers for sure.
Yeah, I obviously don't have any numbers either. I was just curious about your sort of perception of what it feels like. And definitely, I'm definitely on the same page there. It definitely feels like it's a lot more prevalent, a lot more widespread.
Yeah, I would say that it does feel like that to me. I just haven't looked at any numbers or anything like that.
One of the things is when I joined DNC, what I wanted to do was a live audio show. And I actually went as far as creating an instance of DigitalOcean, a little 512 megabyte, you know, tiny instance, and set up Wirecast, I think it was, you know, Wirecast server. And then I set up Audio Hijack to point our stream at that. And then you basically just point some kind of web player at it and people could listen to the show live. And that was actually kind of, you know, obviously it's kind of janky. It's kind of do it yourself. We never actually did it, because then you got to also have chat if you want people to respond and yada yada. Fast forward to today, obviously we're doing this plus video, and I think video, doing a video stream with interactive chat is just more appealing. Like it's a lot more accessible than trying to stream, like essentially listen to a radio show. You know, no, people don't really listen to live radio, right? And that's essentially what it would be like. So I think the video stream gives it that extra dimension that makes it a little more appealing. I mean, certainly the tooling's all there, so why not take advantage of it?
Yeah, and it was crazy easy to set up this time around. So that also, you know, made it. I didn't have to fiddle around too much. It just sort of worked. And we're like, okay, we're just doing it now. I guess the other thing I wanted to mention was that, you know, Microsoft Build happened, and I didn't really follow too closely into things. Obviously, it was an online conference this year. There are a couple of things that came out that I thought were really exciting for me. So I've been having lots of frustrations with my MacBook Pro recently. And I think I actually just need to send it in and get the top case replaced, which I don't want to do.
No, don't do it.
I think that's what needs to happen. Because I think I mentioned it, right? Like the keyboard is doing this double key pressing thing, and I had to install a software debouncer for my keyboard to make it stop.
So you didn't mention this on the show, but you sent me a screenshot of it, and the fact that you need a debouncer in software is just that's the code smell to end all code smells, man. That's awful.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's called Unshaky, the app is. But yeah, so basically for every key on your keyboard, you can set a debounce timeout. So like my E key has 20 milliseconds applied to it, and my space bar is 40 milliseconds applied to it. And so sometimes if I'm typing really fast, I'll miss a double E, or I'll miss like an E two letters after another E or something like that if I'm typing complete. And it's just so frustrating. And the keyboard, it's Bluetooth issues, all sorts of small problems with it. So I have a desktop tower, like a PC tower. I just started using that. I'm not doing tons of programming right now, so I just switched back over and didn't miss a beat. And my MacBook Pro is just in my backpack right now. I haven't touched it in I don't know how many days. So anyway, so yeah, I've been using WSL2 for a while, Windows subsystem. Linux, WSL, Windows Subsystem for Linux. And so anyway, you can run Linux on your Windows machine, right? And so one thing that I've always talked about is how I love JetBrains and I love their IDEs.
Once or twice.
So let me back up. So with WSL2, you know, it runs Windows or runs Linux on your Windows machine.
Hold on. Is WSL2 even out yet?
Oh, sorry, it's still in beta, so it's in the insiders, Windows insiders. So you can actually, it's basically a virtual thing that runs on your computer, and so you can tunnel into it using the Windows terminal and run stuff just like normal. But what if you want to use like a GUI Git app or like an IDE that's not VS Code? Because VS Code has a remote plugin that actually, when you run code from within WSL, it installs the code helper on the Linux side and then opens it on the Windows side and they connect. So your Windows side VS Code instance is actually driving a headless version of code inside of the editor.
Like a client, server client kind of thing.
Exactly. But what if you don't want to use VS Code? So another thing you can do is you can mount the WSL file system as a network drive in Windows and then open the files up that way, but it's slow. And I think at some cases you can run into file ending encoding and stuff like that problems. And so another solution is to use an app like VCXServe or X410 is what I use. So what that does is you install a little helper on Windows side, and when you open an app on the Linux side, it streams the output, the GUI output, to the X window on the Windows side.
Wait, is it X Windows or is it like a VNC kind of thing where it's streaming pixels?
X Windows,
okay.
So yeah, and that's okay. But then if you're running a 4K monitor, you run into scaling issues and some config stuff, and it's annoying. And sometimes the output can be a little fuzzy. And like if you drag the window around really fast, it's sort of like it's like too slow to redraw it. So there's all sorts of quirks that happen with it.
Just to butt in here, if you're not aware, macOS has, well, originally this was X11 was built into macOS. It's now been relegated to a third-party thing called X-Quartz. You can do X11 forwarding on the Mac as well. You just do SSH with a -X option, and you can run X11 Windows natively in macOS. And you know what? Like, this blew my mind when I discovered it for the first time, and I basically never really used it for anything practical. But I've got a little Raspberry Pi running some specialized ham radio software hooked up to a radio that I've got here in my closet. And I just do SSH or X11 forwarding, and I can run that software remotely on the Raspberry Pi without having to set up VNC or anything. So, like, it's definitely still a thing, and it works fine. Like, you know, it's definitely still a thing that, you know, I wouldn't maybe use it for getting work done, but just wanted to throw it out there. That's still an option for getting around some of these things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just stream it into my PC. Mm-hmm. But I've been doing that, and it's okay. It's workable if you wanted to do that. So you could actually just install the Linux version of WebStorm or whatever inside of WSL and then use X Windows to use it on the outside. But over Build Conference, they announced that they're going to build a system in to WSL natively, first party, that allows you to use your Linux GUI apps on the Windows side without using X Windows, and it also supports GPU hardware acceleration.
So basically everything we've mentioned up to this point has been a hack.
Yes.
And they're actually giving us real GUI Linux apps in Windows.
Yeah, and on top of that, they're also going to make it work with like machine learning, so like TensorFlow and things like that, CUDAs and the NVIDIA systems that people use for machine learning and training will also just work.
Now, is WSL running under some kind of emulation, or is it running directly on the Intel sort of architecture?
I believe WSL 2 is a very lightweight VM.
Okay.
Yes, I haven't read enough to the docs to like really talk about in depth about that, but I believe that WSL 2 is virtualized. I'm really looking forward to that. That's going to be cool. I'll just be able to use my JetBrains things without having to stuff for all those scaling issues, hopefully.
Now you're using Docker for at least all your dependencies for your development, right? I mean, except for
yes.
The application itself, you know, sort of Elixir, Erlang, Beam stuff. Everything else is just Docker. So you're going to continue to use Docker for that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they have one of the newer versions of Docker for Windows has direct support, like built-in support for WSL too. So within WSL, you can actually just access your Docker containers that are running over the exposed ports. So you can access them from WSL or from your Windows side as well. It just makes it just work. And the same thing too, like if you say like npm run dev or something and it spins up a server on port 8000, you in your browser on Windows you go localhost 8000 and get to that running port. It does all the mapping for you.
Any issues getting things to compile or anything like that so far?
No, not really.
Cool. And they also announced a new package manager as well. I mean, Chocolaty.
Oh yeah,
has been
about
the
that.
Sort of. I think it was unofficial, right? I don't think it was a first party.
Right. Yep.
Package manager, Chocolaty NuGet, which is just the like. I thought Go had bad package names. This is a bad name for a product. And so they've got WinGet, right? WinGet is the new thing. Is that part of WSL or is that an actual Windows command line thing?
Actually, Windows command line.
Right. So that's just on the Windows side of things. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so yeah, it feels bad for the Chocolaty team, but yeah, it's Windows has a first party package management system coming in now.
They got Sherlocked.
Yeah, yeah. From what I've seen on Twitter, it just works. Like Sean Larkin from Webpack, he had some screenshots of just installing Node. It was like WinGet Node or whatever, and it just worked. He was like, "Oh, this is amazing!" Because I guess before you had to click all these things and it was just more difficult. So yeah, it seems like the developers got a lot of really cool things. Also, one thing that I was excited about was just more updates to their Power Toys. So I'm not really familiar with Power Toys from back in the day. But one thing that I really missed on my PC was like Alfred style window switching and searching and launching. And there are a number of third-party sort of open source packages that do that. And they're all okay. None of them are as great as Alfred, of course. But so Microsoft puts out this Power Toys tool, which has a collection of nice things. So there's a tiling window manager called Fancy Zones. So you can basically set up divisions on your screen. You can quickly snap, like using the window and arrow keys. You can just move a window and it'll snap around to those zones, however you size them, which is nice. It has a number of Explorer improvements. So like you can batch rename things and quick look style previewing. Like on Mac, if you hit space on a file, it opens a preview of if it's a PDF or a text file or whatever. But they also added, I think it's called Run or Runner. But yeah, so basically you just hit Alt space and you type your app name and it launches it. And if it's already open, it just opens it, which is what I'm used to with Alfred anyway. So that's like another check off the list of like, okay, I don't miss that anymore, you know, because I didn't really use Alfred for the workflows or anything like that. I just used it for launching and window switching.
I use it as a glorified calculator too, which is such a waste of CPU cycles.
Yeah, but it's just like with every like month that goes on, with every release cycle that goes on, something else is checked off my box that I really miss and pushes me back to Mac OS. It's just check, check, check.
To Mac OS?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool that they brought back the Power Toys name because that was a thing back in the early days of Windows, and it was kind of a loosely coupled sort of branding for these. They're really, really unofficial sort of weird extensions to the operating system I'm trying to remember exactly. There was one, I think you could like save the icon position or desktop, right? Like you could do stuff like that. Like right click on something and save your icon positions, because God forbid your screen resolution changes and all your icons get all messed up, right? All kinds of like system tweaks and stuff like that. And it's cool that they're bringing it back, and it seems like in a more formal, accessible way that's more about power users and less about let's overclock my PC kind of extensions. You know, these are
yeah.
more just productivity enhancement tools than they are low-level system tweaking. So I think that's cool.
I sort of feel like I'm being courted as a developer, which is nice. You know, like, I'll keep releasing these nice things and I might send you my money by buying a laptop, you know, or sticking around, I guess. You know, I don't need a laptop because I have a tower here, but it's interesting. I used to feel that way about Mac. Whenever like the announcements would come out, like, oh, the new MacBook Pro looks awesome, I need that. It's like got everything I need. And more recently with that, it's like, I don't want that. Specifically, I don't want that, you know. I don't know. Maybe I'm drinking the Kool-Aid a little bit. I even have my Microsoft, for the viewers of the stream, I have my Microsoft water bottle here from the Ignite conference.
So I was watching, today I was watching, someone shared the iChat announcements from WWDC 2007. That was 13 years ago, for those keeping track of what year it is. It's all our regular guy, you know, Steve Jobs up there demoing all these cool things with doing video calls on iChat. They do all these funny video effects with Phil Schiller hanging upside down from the ceiling and looking like a force ghost from Star Wars and yada, yada, yada. And then they show one where, and I don't actually know if this ever made it to production, because I could say I never actually saw anyone use it. You could do this iChat thing where you provide a picture of a person and then you can, it basically erases their mouth and lets you put your mouth in their mouth. This is like Snapchat filters 101 at this point, but it was cool in 2007. And so they do this funny example at the end, spoilers, where Phil Schiller puts his face or his mouth on Steve Ballmer's face and was like, I love my back. Ha ha ha. It sticks his tongue out.
That's so weird.
It's great. They're just, and Steve Jobs is literally like choking on his water bottle, laughing so much. It's great. Oh man, what a shift in tone from that 2007. To today with Microsoft and the Microsoft of then and the Microsoft of now and what they've been focusing on, at least from a development perspective. It's really, really something.
Well, I'm plunging in and I'll let you know if I get eaten or not by the sharks that lie in the deep. So far, I haven't had any problems, but...
And it's funny that it's hardware issues that are pushing you there. It's not like there's anything...
Oh my gosh.
Right? I mean, that's the main driver for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I reset my PRAM... or whatever it's called, which pissed me off because...
SMC reset, PRAM reset, you gotta do it.
Yeah, so when I did that, then I plugged my monitor in, and then I couldn't get the right resolution, nor could I get 60 hertz.
Mm.
And it took some sort of like incantation of unplugging and replugging cords, and finally, if I plug my monitor into just the right port, now I get full 4K resolution and 60 hertz. But if I plug into any other port, it doesn't. And it was never like that before. Just unreal.
Something, something functional high ground.
Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, I'll keep you guys updated. I'm fine. I feel productive with Windows. You know, I feel like, I'm getting stuff done and I'm not getting distracted all the time anymore. So it's like close enough now, and most of my tools are browser based or OS agnostic. So it's not a huge deal.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good place to be. I mean, I'm not going to go down that road, but I'm glad you're having success with it.
I think maybe my favorite thing is that it's just pure silence in my office. I don't have this like this hiss, this like background like meh, all the time.
Oh, what, your MacBook fans?
Always, all the time, always. Just burr in the back. If anything, now it's like a low like.
You know how to solve that, right?
Just unplug the fans.
No, just get a Mac Pro. Problem solved.
Good grief. Get an iMac or something like that.
Get some Mac Pro wheels and screw them into a skateboard and ride it around.
That's dangerous because aren't they like swivel? Aren't they swivel?
Yeah, I'll put a link to that in the show notes. Braille Skateboarding on YouTube did that. It's great.
Oh yeah, shout out to Braille. I've wasted so much time watching their videos.
So much time.
Those wheels are dangerous though. I have an ATA flight case for my guitar cabinet, and it has those wheels on the bottom of it. So it's this big black, like, wooden metal case with these wheels. And so if you let it go, it's going to roll. And I remember one night we were playing a show in Athens, Georgia. We're playing at the 40 Watt club there. And I remember we were loading in, and on the side of the club, there's like a little hill. And I had my amp head, I had an orange head sitting on top of my cab, and my orange head's not in a hard shell case. And my cab is. And so who's ever like helping us load out, just like wheels my amp and then lets it sit there, and my amp just starts slowly rolling down the hill, and it's like spinning, and finally it rolls over and the head slams on the ground. So now I have an orange head, I have a duo terror, and the top handle metal is like bent in because it fell at first. Luckily none of like the tubes broke or anything. But
you know what someone needs to make? I have yet to see this, but I also have not really looked. Someone needs to make chocks. Like wheel chocks for a Mac Pro. A little 3D printed or something. Little yeah. Yellow rubber chocks with a little string. Because they don't have a foot,
like for airplanes?
Have a foot brake on it. Yeah, just like you put on an airplane or a truck or something. Get wheel chocks for your Mac Pro. I think that'd be great. You could make $1 million. Sell them for, I don't know, for what the wheels cost. You could sell chocks for a good markup.
Probably. You can make them out of walnut or bamboo or Ooh. All sorts of materials.
Now you're talking.
Yeah. But what do you think? Should we take the recording down and then hang out for a bit?
Yeah, let's do it.
Well, if anyone has any thoughts or feelings or feedback on anything we talked about today, let us know. I'd be particularly interested in what people are thinking and feeling about, you know, just live streaming in general. Is interesting to you? Would you ever consider doing it? If you wouldn't consider doing it, why? All that stuff. Just let us know.
You can let us know on Twitter, DNCcast. Sean is Sean Washbot, and I am Shruckwell. And of course, we are live Thursdays, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, on Twitch.tv/DNCcast. So come say hi.
And as always, the show notes will be available at dnc.show. So everything we talked about today, all the little tools and utilities and terms, we like to link to definitions of all those and put them on our website. So if you want to look at the show notes, head on over to dnc.show.
And also funny YouTube videos. Required viewing.
And I guess last but never least, thanks to Spec for having us and putting us out there in the world. And if you're watching the stream, you'll notice their nice little logo in the top right of the corner. But yeah, if you're interested in design and development related podcasts, you should definitely head on over to spec.fm and check them out. They've got quite a few shows going there that have been going for a while. And I think you'll probably find some valuable content there.
Indeed.
Indubitably. All right. Well, we'll talk to you next week.